I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab on the road with me. And I got in the studio, Travis Stroop. We've met in Madrid, where we both live, New Mexico.
We do similar work in town.
You know, your spirit really shines through your art as a wood carver. And I was on the show a couple weeks ago talking about Khalil Gibran on houses. And I was looking out the window at your beautiful wood carvings and Gibran talking about the spirit that lives in our houses. And I related it to the soul in the wood. Like, how's a house alive, man? How's that wood alive to you? You know, you bring animals and mythical creatures and, you know, beings to life.
It's not uncommon in New Mexico, and the description of housing and, you know, the vision of how the perfect atmosphere or environment might be by Khalil Gibran and his works is interesting because I see a lot of it in New Mexico architecture. Earth, wood, you know, you pay attention to which side the sun is on. You take account of where the wind is blowing. There's like ways of living in this housing, like airing it out in the morning so that it's cool all day, like things that people don't really experience in other types of housing, where it's like a living, breathing thing.
Last night, for example, the sounds that this house makes as it's breathing around me, the pressure changes in the weather, and Bad DJ, she's one of the carpenters that I learned to work with wood with, and she's like, you gotta keep in mind that this is still going to do things. Wood is alive, you know.
It is.
Yeah.
Some of my pieces don't sell until they've weathered for 2 or 3 years and they get that very special, perfect look. And it's kind of magical to watch. But so are people. And so are the houses. I mean, people come out here and they're like, how can people live in this environment? You know what I mean? Some of them when they're taking their pictures. But the interesting part of it is it's the brokenness on the outside that is drawing the look. It's part of the whole vibration of driving through this town, an old mining town, a ghost town. It's supposed to look broken up, but no, this is actually us doing our best. You know?
Let's just talk about our relationship to the prophet and the story that you told me in the Mineshaft Tavern.
So a friend of mine from here from New Mexico, my best friend, Aaron Martinez, he's a great musician. He and I were taking off to Jamaica to try to figure out the roots of the music that we were being introduced to as young men. So we basically took off with nothing and like a couple backpacks full of whatever we thought we could get through the jungle with. Turns out, like, the only thing that you need in the jungle, and you always need it, is a machete. But my ex filled her backpack full of books. And I had to carry a lot of those books a lot of the time and was feeling a way about those books. And I get there, and I realize that everyone there reads. Like super high literacy rate, but they're just going into town and getting old boxes of books from wherever, and it's like cheesy romance novels. It doesn't even matter. It just, people are reading there at the time in the 90s. This was like 91. Yeah, so we get to the village, and of course, after getting a spot and getting established, first order of business was for the kids to go through the backpacks and everyone find out what the heck you brought. Because the thing about living on an island is that's the only thing that really comes through. Like, it's a big deal when a ship lands and unloads, and, you know, it's Walkmans. It's like all this, you know, news from the outside world and vibrations. And
The prophet, he's looking for his ship, is about to take him away. And I talk a lot about immigration and how people who are isolated in these places, how important the traveler is and our approach today to a traveler or an immigrant.
Being able to share music, share stories, really get into some of the rich history of the word of mouth that passes from generation to generation about all of the things that make us who we are. So anyways, the book comes out of the backpack and, you know, a couple people were looking at it, passing it around. And this old elder of the village, he took a look at it and he's like, give me 5 minutes with this book. He took off, rounded up everyone who was left over. And the village was Middlesex, which is sort of in the mountains from the Grill. Real small, maybe 30, 40 people there. And the landlady of the whole place is this 99-year-old lady called Miss Penn. She was given the land as reparations. And so I was paying $20 a year, basically, for an acre of land that had like an old broken down house that could maybe be fixed or enough fruit trees to keep me going. So anyways, he comes back with the book. A bunch more people stands on a log and starts reading it out loud. And before he gets too far into it, he just starts weeping. And if you've ever read The Prophet and you're in the right mindset, it can do that. Like, it can really open up some strange spaces in your soul. And back then, you know, like a lot of things that you feel your way through in the world, you're feeling the vibration, but you're also getting chemical outputs from your body, from each different experience. And so back then we used to call it the quickening. It's the quickening of the spirit. It's like when your chest starts to open up and you realize that the vibration has taken a severe turn to a higher level. And that's what I was feeling sitting there watching the people listen to this book. And yeah, it was very powerful. That was the drug of choice for me in the early times of my life, was the quickening. How to recreate that moment of just intense vulnerability, all of us together, just feeling our way through something. That was basically where it started. And then after that, I've always kept an extra copy. If someone's having a problem, just sit with us. Some very close friends of mine are, you know, they've laughed when I've pulled it out. Like, it looks like you need it. And they just see it and they're just like, oh, man.
And do they just flip to a poem?
Man, that's all you need to do. It only takes one or two, and it's an easy read. It's real short. It's
I'm going to call you out now. And, here, man. Take this copy from 1942.
From 1942.
This copy from 1942. One of our neighbors. Would you read us a piece? You don't have your glasses?
Yes.
What do you need, readers?
Yeah, just some like kind 100s? Well, it's very thoughtful of you. I always appreciate thoughtfulness. I guess if I was a real old guy, I'd be like, that's a thing that's missing these days, is thoughtfulness. That's just what the old people used to tell us when we were young. It's the day lived all over again, just like that same thing, finding myself on the other side, but trying not to go in the same directions as before. And everybody hates that.
If I'm getting you right, it makes me think, when I think of a spiral, you know, where we honor where our past, where we come from and the tradition, but then we try to take it to the next step of evolution.
Yes. And this often happens with spiritual beings in New Mexico. For me, the synchronicities are off the hook. Like, usually I'll have a conversation with somebody, and then if there's a reference or if I need to pull an animal card or if there's some kind of a thing going on next, it will almost completely mirror what happened before. And those synchronicities are out of the ether, you know. And I'm really appreciative of them because they have affirmed me of my ability to see through the veil or be on either side, maybe. You know what I mean? At the crossroads of the veil.
I have a similar attachment to verification.
Yes.
I'm gonna call it that. It just occurred to me as you were talking, to associate it with the decolonization of my own mind and allowing myself to remember and trust my intuition and connection to the collective in a healthy and healing way. When colonizers take over and begin their assault of ownership, they rob people of their connection to their own spirit, to their own history, to the land. So when we have these synchronous moments, and it's like, yes, you know, it's true. We are more than these brick walls. Like, I know a thing. And when I feel it in my gut, no oppressive person can tell me. It's just one more. It's like just having a parent tell you, hey, good job. Like, you know, the universe is that parent.
Sometimes the moments almost seem unbelievable. Miraculous, like just out of the blue. And, you know, just like everything, we want more of what we think is lovely. But that's not actually how it works either. The topic we had earlier on paradox. And just like the poem Joy and Sorrow, for instance, you know, or thinking about how my own hardships have given me the, you know, the strength to hold more empathy and compassion, and, you know, it's the paradox. But I'm going to read this passage just because I read the first section and I was already laughing. And a man said, speak to us of self-knowledge. And he answered, saying, your hearts know in silence. Your hearts know in silence the secrets of the days and the nights, but your ears thirst for the sound of your heart's knowledge. You would know in words that which you have always known in thought. You would touch with your fingers the naked body of your dreams. It is well you should. The wellspring of your soul must needs rise and run murmuring to the sea. And the treasure of your infinite depths would be revealed to your eyes. But let there be no seals to weigh your unknown treasure. And seek not the depths of your knowledge with staff or sounding line. For self is a sea of boundless and measureless. Say not, I have found the truth, but rather I have found a truth. Say not, I have found the path of the soul. Say rather, I have met the soul walking upon my path. For the soul walks upon all paths. The soul walks not upon a line. Neither does it grow like a reed. The soul unfolds itself like a lotus of countless petals.
Oh, thank you.
Got to wait for me for a minute.
Yes, yeah, that old one too. This one's almost 100 years old, 1942. That's an 80-year-old energy.
Yes, and it's like affirmation of the quickening, because your body's trying to tell you to do the things that the universe wants and a little bit of what your consciousness wants, you know. And like you were saying, like people paying rent on you or whatever they're doing, colonizing your mind, that's like the front end of the mind. What's happening in the subconscious is where a lot of the deep calculations are happening. All of the things that you can't imagine, like when we see a ninja on TV pull off a move, I've seen people do that in hacky sack before. Because of what? Like, at some point, they just surrender to the feeling of where that thing might be. And they somehow hit it right where they wanted it, you know? And it's the surrender, you know, that people see in the real world but don't want to acknowledge what they're seeing. Like the X Games, for instance. You know, you see these kids jump off a ramp, do 100,000 flips in the snow and land it. But they're working on a different part of the brain, where the flow happens, like where us artists seem to find or try to recreate the flow, because that's where work happens effortlessly. And it's like a surrender to the subconscious, I feel like, sometimes. It's like magic.
It is magic.
But a higher vibration, that's the difference. Because like the chemical feelings and inner feelings you can get from the quickening, there's people that are running on primal urges as their source for those chemicals, whether it be trying to increase their testosterone or being any of these different archetypes that might raise the vibration of them getting, for instance, dopamines and whatever. You know what I mean? And those things can take you on a train ride. You know, there's a lot of chemical combinations, and they're all going to be present in every person. So for me, it was a safe path. The quickening seemed like a pretty safe way to, I guess, get my rocks off. How you want to just like to go deeper into that, because we do want to feel like we're part of something huge, and it doesn't really get affirmed until these deeper conversations and poems get written by people who try to nail it down to something, and people who make environments who try to nail it into that. You know, it's always that difference between wanting to thrive and just live. You know, like you've already seen what living is. Everyone wants to take it to that next crazy level. And I think that that's cool about people, you know. In some form, we think we're divorced from nature. But, you know, a bear gets into your greenhouse is super stoked that you're there. Nature adores us. Like, we're doing some things on the side that we're not really taking credit for, but, and then it's all these ideas, they get thrown to the wind like an elm tossing its seeds. You know, there's thousands and thousands of them, all ideas. Pretty much all of them are good ideas. They just got to land in the right spot.
That's right. We were talking about that owl that I was looking at, admiring, that you made, and you said something to me about how once you create a piece, you've done your part, you release it. And I'm just associating that with what you were just saying about just living, just life.
Well, no, I don't want it to sound like some kind of thing. It's not. It's also my way of avoiding the responsibility of feeling the money vibration on the other end. Because that's almost intolerable to me when I think about it. Like, if I can't buy something, I don't want to make that something. You know what I mean? And that's a weird spot for an artist to be in. You know, like, I would own half the dish that I made if I could afford to. Because I kind of just made it to make, you know. It's like a collaboration with the tree. And a lot of times out here, the trees I get have been rejected by everybody else. So,
tell us about your trees.
Well, the trees, I like to work with elm because it's, you know, it's whatever they want to call it, invasive species like me. And we have those things in common, and no one wants to burn it. Everyone wants to just chip it or throw it at the dump, but they're kind of important. They're 90% of the canopy in New Mexico. So you can eat the seeds when they first pop up straight off of the tree. They're like the sweetest salad you ever had. You mix them in your salad. You can dry them up. You can grind them and turn them into a pancake mix because they fluff up nicely. So, yeah, I think a lot about elms, obviously, out here because they're either popping up in your plumbing or
I'm like, I've never heard anybody talk about an album this lovingly.
Oh, man.
God bless you, man. I swear to God. Like, that album, they needed love. I just was participated in bringing one down last week. So, I was like, dude, did anybody talk to this tree first? You know?
No, I think, you know, if we could hear them, they'd probably be laughing at us pretty good.
What was this? I was reading from Close the other day and talking about the North Wind laughing at us. I'm like, why are you laughing?
Man, we'd be hilarious.
Really. Yeah.
Keeps moving those sticks around. What do you think he's doing?
Yeah, we got to stay busy. Where do you collect your wood?
A lot of times it comes to me. People have extra wood, or there's a place at the sawmill that they have a section for carvers to buy by the foot or whatever, but I don't make enough off of my carving that I can spend a lot of money on wood. So a lot of times either tree service has surplus, I can buy a truckload that way, supportive friends that run across it, you know, in that way, and the occasional run to the ballpark, see what people have left in the burn pile. Like I said, elm is not a preferable burn because of the smell. So, Khalil Gibran said, trees are the poems the earth writes to the sky. So, and we cut them down to record our sorrows. I'm probably shortened to that, but that's the general.
Tell me about your time in Jamaica. How long were you there?
I was there for about 6 months. I was as long as I could escape immigration in the hills. Eventually, you got to go to town for something. And so, yeah, I was there for 6 months. And it was pretty magical coming from the desert to the jungle. I had always imagined what that much life must look like. And you just can't imagine hard enough growing up in the sand and wind out here that could even exist. I saw the ocean for my first time, and that was in Miami before I got on the plane. And like a proper redneck, I ran past all the red flags and jumped right in and got tumbled for a long time. Yeah. And the second time in the ocean was Negril, was able to wade out in the beautiful blue Bahama waters, and almost a quarter mile from the beach, I was standing up to my waist looking at sea creatures, and then got chased out by tiger shark. And so that went as I had imagined, being a desert dweller who had seen Jaws. I'd always, always thought that was going to happen. And it did. So it was magic. I mean, there's a lot to be learned in traveling and how similar that people are. You don't have to have, I mean, language is not even a barrier in my mind anymore, because that's it. 80% of communication is body language. And if you're working with a carpenter from anywhere, they're going to see what's going on and you're just going to get the flow eventually. And so obviously they speak some English in Jamaica, but it's fast and furious and mixed and all of that. So, but I tried some cane farming for a minute, had my ass handed to me, and which was an important part of my upbringing, you know, like in the redneck world, you're just supposed to lean into everything that kicks your ass. So I appreciated that. And yeah, they appreciated watching it happen.
So it's a trip, man. I'm looking at you, man. You don't look like a redneck to me. I mean, I'm like, that's a brown man right there. And they're like, no, yeah. Travis is white. I'm like, no, he's not.
Well, yeah, that's what the redneck said, too. But Like, quit standing over here by us too close. What's going on? No. No, there's a vibration with that that I appreciate. But growing up in the South, it's hard to get around the fact that, you know, religion is just pushing people away from the spirit, pushing people away from the creator, from Mother Earth, from everything that should make sense. And the only way I had to unravel that was to just go and talk about it with people that I could hear through the music were catching on to something that everyone was missing. And I needed to go and experience a little bit of that. And also see how someone could pull off as a group, a faction like that, and then still divide into 12 other groups. It was like that personality thing that happens. Wherever we go, there we are, you know. And so there's like all different types. But like I said earlier, back then, it was a lot about reading and books. And for me, the coffee culture and whatnot had a lot to do with it. So if you never heard of Blue Mountain Coffee, it's one of the best. And, you know.
So what was coffee culture like?
Well, down there, people were interested in, for instance, like the Ethiopian coffee ceremony. They're trying to connect to roots. You know what I mean? Like, and that means roasting the beans and spending the time together to get it happening. And it's a certain preparation that is what makes me think of like how we try to understand each other in religion. Like you and I bringing our pipes together and having them sit. This reminds me almost of a tea party type of thing, or that extra preparation you might do. Like smoking chalice, there is a preparation because you take your bowl and you take your piece of nutmeg and you cut lines in the side of it. And that nutmeg goes into the bottom, the nut. And that's your filter for the chalice. And you'll know when you hit the nutmeg that the herb is smoked. And then the way the chalice smokes, you're going to smoke like a quarter of weed all in one hit.
Is it big?
A lot of times it's a calabash or, you know, like a large coconut shell type setup.
Dang, but, like a whole coconut? Like a coconut shell?
Yeah. So, and it'd be a hose to that, and, you know, you just get it going really hot till the top of that thing is red, and then take a huge hit, and it was pretty incredible. It was like taking communion. That's how they saw it. This is our breaking of the bread, basically. So.
Wow. So how welcoming it sounds like people were to you.
Some, yes. Yeah. I mean, extreme poverty is there too, and tourists are low-hanging fruit, so you have to keep your eye open. But, you know, coming from New Mexico, that was second nature. So,
where'd you grow up?
Born in Lovington, grew up in Carlsbad, eventually made it to Albuquerque after college. Went 1 year for theater design, sound, engineering, lighting, sets, and then went into a work program with the college where I was working with the union in El Paso. So we did road shows. We did, I worked the tours like Guns N' Roses, Metallica, high steel rigging. So back then I was making $27.50, which seems like today you have to beg for. But, you know, it was pretty good work and got me out into the world, out of the bubble that the South tries to create, or that we all try to create in various ways besides just bubbles that I create. But it but creating bubbles is literally kind of what we do. It's like we look for patterns and then we try to generalize, and then we go down that road of thinking we know something, only to find out as soon as you start to know something, what you're starting to know is that you can't know anything about that thing.
Yeah, and don't let somebody try to bust your bubble.
Yeah.
It got to pop on its own.
Yeah, and try to stay in the moment. Chase the bubble. Play with the bubble. Do something. Quit trying to avoid the bubble.
I gave up trying to avoid your bubbles. I was like, what is he doing? How long is this going to last? How long have you been doing those bubbles out there? It seemed like forever.
Off and on for years, I've done it as like cheap therapy. It's like stemming, you know what I mean? When you've got a bunch of apes around you trying to pull some alpha fish and you pull out a bunch of bubbles, it really just changes the atmosphere. You know, it's like they're 3 years old again and everything's okay. But, you know, I discover the bubbles through my kids. And in my introduction, I should have said that, you know, I see myself as a father first because that separates you as a group in society. Like, people trying to raise kids have a completely different agenda than people that are just trying to make it. It gets into that whole weird tribal split setup where a lot of the people I know are parents because those are the ones I can relate to. And in relationships, relating on some level is important. So we gravitate towards our bias, towards our similar types. And so back in the day, that's what Rasta felt like to me, because nobody had dreadlocks back then. It seemed like a very specific thing to a group of people. And as a vow against vanity, that kind of thing had its own built-in learning process of how you were going to have to basically put your character up front, because your curb appeal just went out the window. You know.
So what do you mean on the side of not having locks? What's the vanity indicator?
It was no more cutting or combing of the hair, basically. Right. And it's, you know, worldwide. That's what ends up happening, is you're carrying locks at that point. But.
And I mean, because I just want to clarify for people who are listening, and also for myself, you know, being a queer black woman, I never really found a place in
Understood.
Rasta.
Understood.
However, this is still my family and my heritage and my people. And there's so much of it that I could really be into, the Ital, all of it, except the part about, you
Understood.
Know.
Understood. Like, I dig know. That fully. There's music that I've had to cancel just because I revisited and been like, how is it that I missed that vibration? But it's also how I've changed too, to like really be hypersensitive to it now. And, you know, there's a lot of things in the world we can just brush by just because it's easy to not focus in. But that's an important one, because, you know, a lot of Rastas would try to have this reasoning about, well, if it doesn't apply to nature, it doesn't apply, you know, to reasoning of any kind. But then they would try to say, and as far as gays go, and you're like, wait a minute, you know, what are you talking about? This doesn't involve nature. This is part of nature, just like everything else. And because you don't choose to see it that way, you need a group to kick down on. That's the one you're going to choose. You're playing their game.
That's it.
And the thing of it is, you know, growing herb, half your job is looking for hermaphrodites. What's going on? What's going on right there in your freaking face? You know, come on now. That's nature trying to outwit me as a farmer. You know what I mean? I'm trying not to make seeds, and those plants are like, no, we already have a plan B. You know, and that plan B has always been there. It was never, you know, not part of the plan. So acting like somebody's not part of the plan is like saying the creator doesn't even exist. And I believe the LGBT community adds a lot of flavor in my life that would be absent and missing if it wasn't there. I've seen it in all the cultures, like some of the most conservative places, like in Costa Rica, where you've got this guy that, you know, in the America would be called, you know, a super flamer. Like, this guy is just himself out front, can't stop it, but so lovable, you can't stop it. And that's love. Like, he's in a conservative village full of farmers and all this, running the grocery store, And they'll go in there to see him for a piece of gum just to hear him talk for a minute because he's hilarious. And he loves everybody. And he hugs everybody. You know what I mean? He's a hugger. So you can't get away from him, even though he's on the other side of the counter. He's coming at you as soon as you get. And to watch him push that energy to the point where he's on the other side of it, he doesn't have to like look for validation. It's coming to him now that he's important and valued. And if anyone were to mess with him, all of those conservatives would be in with pitchforks protecting him because he would be missed. I don't know how else to say it. Like, it's pure magic. Like, the human presence in whatever form is magical to me. And if, like, you know, diversifying your stocks is good, maybe diversity in nature is good. We know that through our observations. Maybe we can finally decide it's okay to, like, you know, think about some diversity as a positive sign, you know?
I appreciate that so much. I appreciate you so much calling all that out, man. That is truth. That is,
and it's the very least I can do because it always feels that way, you know. It always feels like things aren't happening fast enough. Like, you hear about these moments, and because of technology and media and whatever, you're allowed to see a moment that happened to somebody in an airport or at a place, and all of a sudden you're like carrying that energy all day, and that's hard for people who absorb energy. It can like kind of mess with the whole point of why the heck did you wake up, you know?
I want to come back to your identity as a dad. I like how you call your kids saplings. Can you speak on that just a little bit? And I'm thinking specifically when you were saying that trees are poems to God. I just think that's beautiful.
Yeah, Georgia O'Keeffe said, if people were trees, I think I'd like them better. Yes. Well, my saplings, I feel like people and trees are so related that we don't even understand. Like, the medicines made by the trees are the exact same medicines that we need. How are we not seeing the relationship in the plant world to the animal world is almost this? It's the same vibration. And that's the problem with consciousness. It all leads to suddenly everything's one and you're nuts. But it's
but that's
like
the most ultimate truth. It's like everything is one.
But think about it. Like, one of the oldest medicines, the Balm of Gilead, mentioned in the Bible. The Balm of Gilead is the resins that will be covering the cottonwood buds in the spring. And it's just dripping off of the tree. Like, you can get those buds off in the spring and you can process it. And it's basically anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial, all of the things. Because the tree needs the same medicine we're needing. But the tree makes that medicine. So, like, our relationship with opiates, for instance, you know, it's a very strange relationship because of what's happening on the street with drugs anytime something gets processed. But when people think of, like, oh, I'm addicted to green chili, I think of opiates because the body has had a relationship with the opiate plant since way back. And so at some point, our body learned how to produce the opiates needed to deal with small pain situations like chili. And in the moment of the heat, your body is creating those opiates and you're going on that little rush. And that's the vibe. Like, that's magic to me that a plant had something and we learned how to make it. So same with cannabinoids, you know, it's like our relationship with that, those plants go deep. You know, we are the plants actually, you know, in the end of it, when we do lose our minds, but
we are the medicine. It's all around us.
Yes. Yeah. Food is medicine. Conversations are medicine. Music is medicine.
Yes, when you said Balm of Gilead, the past couple of days I woke up with that song in my head. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul, to make the wounded whole. Yeah. Sweet Honey and the Rock does a good version of that, and so does Nina Simone.
Well, I never heard it, but
I'll have to send it to
that's
you.
That's a cottonwood tree.
Yeah. Yes. Can we talk about the future for a little bit on the subject of children? Hope. What's your vision?
My kids feel pretty hopeful to me. Like, they know that that's where I'm at for them. And I think now that I've got one in college, he's mentioned over the last year or two, he's starting to feel the sting of reality, which is, you know, a lot of the things you're told are just not true in life. And it could just depend on situations that you're in or where you're at. But, you know, deep feelings. My kids have a very empathetic side to them where they tune in to what's going on a deep level. And, you know, when you're around various types of hardships, I can see them feeling it. But they seem like warriors to me. Like, they're going to do it. They're going to figure it out on their own and have their own complete style of adding something to the mix. But, it's hard keeping hope for them when, you know, I go to various work situations and just feel like, how do I convince the next generation that's going to do what I'm going to do? Like, hey, check it out. You can have everything I have. Like, you know, bony fingers.
Her back and some shoulder pain.
Yeah. Because this is what happens. Like, I find myself in that door position. Like, my name, for instance, Travis, means at the crossroads. Mm. That's where I feel like I'm at all times, where I'm like, okay, as a manager, can I truly convince this next person that what I'm going to ask them to do is a good idea for them to do for some reason? Like, maybe there's a grander purpose to it. Like, try to create some delusional world in your mind where you're like, I'm doing this for the greater good somehow because we need to do this together. But I have a hard time making that argument to other adults. To young people, I try to make them understand that there's a way to flip the ticket where if you imagine a better situation, you've already started it. And then just keep pushing towards that. And try to forget about how we've done it. You know, because the more you quit paying attention to us old people chirping at you about how things need to be done or what's wrong with you, imagine something completely different. There's no rule that says that we have to be part of what you're going to do next, because we own no stake in the future. None. That you could fire an arrow. Your child is like, I know the poem you're looking for. She's flipping through the book. By the way, listen to those 10 million listeners out there.
Yeah, that's right. I need to borrow those readers back for a second. And we're sharing one pair of glasses. The next generation. Speaking of, I need to get one of those little neck chains and just hang it. But what I really popped into my head was, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. That's the one where it's like, we have no concept of the world that they're building.
No, we don't need it either. That's not our business. It's not our business. I get a lot of joy hanging out with Michael. I don't know if you met him.
Yes.
But he's got good energy. And you have to be careful. I don't know if you know about like the MTBJ system, the whole breakdown of the different personality types and whatever.
Human design. Is that the one?
No, it's like INFJ. The INFJ thing. Well, you know, it's people who mirror automatically. And I do the same thing. And we've called each other out on that before. Like, how you just fit in anywhere you go. somehow you just seem to like vibrationally find your way there, but it's not necessarily truthful in that suddenly you may say something and they're like, wait, we thought you were like with us in this, and like, no, I was next to you, you know? And so I enjoy his energy in that we have these deep conversations, with, you know, and he's very interested in these old books and whatnot. And I feel like hitting him with some of that knowledge earlier is exciting to me because it's like an investment. And I see that with my kids too, who are now like friends with him and closer to his age group, and helps me to learn, because there's a lot to be learned just by observing the energy. Like, how long can you hold that energy? Because as long as you can hold that energy, you're going to attract the right vibrations to you. Whatever you can think of will start manifesting. And I try to give examples of it to them, how everything I've done here in Madrid was a dream of mine a long time ago. 10 years ago, I was sitting around telling my friend Oriana about it, and she's like, oh, yeah, that sounds great, you know? And then just 6 months ago, she reminded me. She's like, do you realize that you just did everything that you said you were going to do? And I hadn't, because the long process of the doing sometimes doesn't make you see what's going on, but it starts with that thought. You know, that, and being around the youth, seeing their energy, seeing how their thought processes are going, is magic to me, because it's like watching the quickening happen all over again in the next generation. And that's the glow that I think that every generation tries to leave behind. That's why we write books. That's why we try to record everything, but no matter how hard we try, like, we get wiped out by fire, you know. I mean, and all that's gone.
Car yet window it's busted, not computer gone.
We yeah. know it's not gone, yeah. because it's the awakened knowledge, you know, and it sleeps somewhere. It sleeps in the rabbits, it sleeps in the worms, it sleeps everywhere, that knowledge. The things that we can observe people doing can be observed in nature happening, you know. And I've tried to show my kids before what it is that I can never explain. And there was a moment where we pulled over during a big questioning of like, well, what do you think it's all about moment, you know? And there was a little girl playing under a giant old elm tree. And this elm tree was really tall, maybe 3-4 foot in diameter at the bottom. Had a branch hanging down just low enough, with all the leaves stripped off of it except for one at the very tip. And this girl, for, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes that I was sitting there waiting, was walking back and forth, letting that thing touch her forehead. And I explained to them, like, whatever's happening right there is the most important thing to learn from in this entire city we're sitting in right now. She is in the moment, in her primal impression of the universe. And there's nothing more magical than the ability to be in the moment. It doesn't matter what you're doing. Are you being? You know, it's, I mean, poets have tried to nail it down to paper. Carpenters have tried to carve it into poles. There's no recording of it that is going to do it justice. And that's why we're sitting here talking about it, recording it, because you just can't stop the search for the magic and the raising of the vibration. We can imagine a vibration so high that we don't need to communicate with words, for instance. We can imagine it because we can travel to other places and see it. Because you're going to be sitting there saying nothing while everyone's talking to you. And all that magic's still going to be there. Because you're going to feel the love. You're going to see it through the oldest communication, the body language. Our body language communication, not different than dogs, cats, everything that we deal with, you know. So, yeah, as a culture, I think, like, for males, the whole alpha male thing, that whole thing, it just doesn't work. And within every broken system is built in its own doom. And I think that's kind of what we're watching now, is that nobody's watching them anymore. And it's like you just stole the power of the alpha when they're not the center of attention anymore. And that goes back to the weird primal order of things. But I think, like, for men, the next level is when you're able to control your basic impulses. I mean, we're trying to relate to women, for instance, right now, and it's a whole new world that I find fascinating. And I've tried to, like, watch my young sons, you know, grow up in it and see how they develop their relationship with women. But I think it's one of the most important issues, because if we don't understand paradox as a rule and a law, and that everything we are seeing is all equally important, then we're never going to get to that higher vibration. You know, it's just like there's no apology without reparations and work behind it. Otherwise, that doesn't mean anything. And I feel like for years, a lot of people get frustrated because you do a lot of talking about the things you want, but you just don't quite know how to do the things you want, even though you're already doing it. You just can't seem to affirm yourself that it's happening, but it's happening within what you can reach. And one of the most important things that I could pass on to my kids is the power of understanding the chemicals of the body. You know, who's driving this ship? Really, you know what I mean? Most of the DNA found within the human structure is not human. So if you take that into account, that it's bacteria and these other things that are, they also control the chemical outputs for their own benefit. You know, like a scientific experiment trying to drown rats or whatever kind of dumb dish they do in science labs. Sounds terrible, but they pumped a rat full of probiotics and it wouldn't drown, because the probiotics is trying to save itself. And so it's sending brain signals to make the rat realize that it can float instead of just panicking. And so when you think of it like that, you're like, oh, wait a minute. We're like out there farming sugar like crazy. Like, who's driving this ship? Some kind of yeast bacteria? Like,
I'm on, like, yogurt now. I'm like, give me the probiotics.
But the chemicals drive us. And I saw it earlier, and that's what I chose, like the quickening, for instance, like talking about that and the chemical rush that you get from it. Sex is like that for males, very strong, because the universe just wants kids. You know what I mean? And so the universe has got these built-in high-level chemicals to hit you with, to make you pull into a direction that would be in procreation, for instance. But let's be real. We're not in a level right now with humanity that we need to really be thinking of, that we don't have enough people around, maybe.
I was going to ask you, when you were talking about kids and being detached from their future in a certain way, how you are able to keep your ego out of that and also guide for my own self. You know, I was like, how do I listen to how Travis is speaking and remove myself from an expectation of the future by teaching them the right thing to do and the right way to think? And then it's like, now you're sounding like the GOP, yeah. You know? And it's like, but it's like, no, what you're doing is planting seeds and encouraging remembrance, right?
Yes. When I see my boy jump up because he sees someone headed towards the door that probably can't open it, you know, I get this gush of just, I'm so proud, but at the same time, it's my ex-wife. It's me. It's the community we were around. It's all of those things. It wasn't me. You know what I mean? Like, he's seen how the magic works, like how to be conscious of things around you deep enough to be there when you're needed. Like, sometimes it takes a proactive, like, eyeball, you know, and as a protector, that's all that time is for. You just got your eyes open.
You know? Situational awareness.
Yeah.
And the willingness to do something about it. Don't be shy. Go help. Like, there's nothing to be shy about.
If you have the ability to respond, you have the responsibility.
That's it. I just heard somebody say that, the ability to respond. That's what responsibility is. And I thank you for bringing that back to it. And I want to thank you for your time and your presence.
Much thanks. I'm honored.
Travis Stroop. Reasoning with me. I'm Dream Queen, and you've been in the cab on the road with us. The book club next week, if it's going to go the way that we have things planned, we're going to talk about teaching. A teacher said, speak to us of teaching. And we just got some lessons there from our buddy Travis. Thanks, y'all. Thank you, Travis. In the Cab Radio is produced by Jada White, a.k.a. Dream Queen. Original theme music produced by Baby Weekend Boys and Icky Mac the Beat Jugular. Learn more at In the Cab Radio at Linktree. Thank you so much for tuning in.